My name's Tim Goble, and I was going to talk to you a little bit about some of the work we've been doing modifying polymer flocculants to try to increase their ability to pull phosphate out of wastewater. So as we all know, there's a lot of feed animals out there producing a lot of waste, and that the waste has quite a bit of phosphate in it. The phosphate actually has several different forms. What I'm really interested in is the phosphate that's sorbed to the solid material and the phosphate that's free in suspension. And so the currently mechanical separators remove little of the solid materials that are in the wastewater, about 30%, and that tends to be some of the larger solids where the fine particulate matter has a higher surface area, and so it actually contains more of the phosphate in it. It was shown recently, too, that the addition of polymer flocculants, which will take these small suspended solids and aggregate them into larger solids, which can then fall out of solution, which are called flocs, you can remove the total suspended solids by up to 95%, and so you'll be able to remove the phosphate associated with those solids as well. But they remove little of the aqueous form of phosphate. And so recently also they tried using polymer flocculants in conjunction with aluminum, and they were showed that they were able to remove both the solids and as well as total phosphate. So they were pulling out some of the phosphate that was in the aqueous form. And so our question was just simple, can we modify the polymer flocculants, get away from adding metals to the waste, and just modify the polymer itself to try to increase its binding capacity for phosphate? And this is my simple diagram for what's going on. You'll have to bear with me a little bit. So in wastewater, we do have some solids dispersed, and the phosphate's going to be, here we go, okay, these little black dots. And so some of them are sorbed to the solids, and some of them are free in solution. And so when you add the polymer flocculant, it's going to aggregate all of these together into a larger floc, which can then fall out of solution, which is shown here. And so it's going to take the sorbed phosphate with it to the bottom, leaving a lower concentration of total phosphate in the water on top. And so our idea, and this is a bit of an exaggeration, but is just to make the polymer sort of sticky for the phosphate that's in the aqueous form and try to pull it out of solution along with the sorbed phosphate on the solids, and sort of use this technique as a phase separation technique, pull the solids out and pull a little bit of the aqueous phosphate out as well. Oh, I'm just touching this too quickly, sorry. So to go into a little bit about polyacrylamides, this here is the trimethyl ammonium ion monomer, and this gives it its permanent positive charge. It's not pH sensitive, and you can increase or decrease the charge density of the polymer by increasing the amount of the monomer here. And then this is acrylamide, and so you switch out acrylamide for this monomer to increase the permanent charge, the positive charge density. And so our idea is simply, okay, well, if we can remove some of the acrylamide to increase positive charge density, can we remove some of the acrylamide to increase its phosphate binding capacity and find a trapping group that will interact with phosphate selectively, because there's other anions in solution, and it also has to be a reasonably small functional group. And so that brings us to thiourea. Recently, Kuchiyama published a paper where he was showing an interaction of thiourea's with phosphate. So he made a polymer out of thiourea, and this is his binding mechanism that he's showing. And you can see it's a hydrogen bonding mechanism, which is the weakest bond that we usually can see, but what it lacks in strength, it makes up for with numbers. And so the more hydrogen bonds you have, the stronger the overall bond strength is. And so here he's showing two thiourea's interacting with the phosphate to give a total of a four-point interaction. So his polymer was not water soluble. What he did, he packed it into a column and then ran water through it. And so water with just phosphate in it, he was able to get out 92% of the phosphate. And then with an anion mix, selectivity dropped slightly, but he was still able to maintain a 75% selectivity. And thiourea being a reasonably small and simple molecule, we thought that might be a good target as a functional group to try to add to these polymers to increase the binding affinity for phosphate. And so this is how we did that. This is the monomer for the trimethyl ammonium ion that gives it its positive charge. And this is the acrylamide, and then this is the monomer that we're using for thiourea. And here we're just going to have a two-point interaction because we only have the two thiourea's present. And so we dissolved that in acetonitrile at 45 degrees. We used AIBN as an azo initiator to initiate the polymerization. And so I made two different polymers out of this. One of them, they all have 40% positive charge density. And then this one has 20% of the thiourea and then 40% of this two-point thiourea. And so in an effort to try to gain extra bond strength, we added another amine group off of the aromatic, which should fold over and give us a third point of interaction, to give us a three-point interaction with phosphate. And again, that was made the same way, but only at 20% thiourea. So in terms of a procedure, I really just wanted to keep it simple because I'm only interested in the aqueous phase of the phosphate and what the polymers can do to pull that out. So I used a Gonzalez bentonite as a solid material, weighed out 125 milligrams into a test tube. We added 19 mils of water and then let it sit overnight to try to hydrate and minimize the amount of phosphate that's going to be pulled out by the clay. We then spiked it with a half a mil of phosphate solutions to give us final concentrations of 1.5 and 0.25 part per million. We vortexed that for 5 seconds to make sure it's completely mixed. And then we added the polymer, half a mil of the polymer, to give a final concentration of 25 parts per million of the polymers. It was vortexed and then allowed to settle for 20 minutes. We took a sample from the top of it. And because we're running this by IC, we had to go through some steps to clean it up. And so we centrifuged it and then filtered it through a 0.2 micron filter and then analyzed that on IC. So some of the polymers that I was planning on using, there's two off the shelf, Magnaflock N and Magnaflock C. N is a 100% acrylamide, a non-ionic polymer, but all of the polymers here have acrylamide in them. So I wanted that as a control to see how it was going to interact with phosphate. I then had Magnaflock C, which has 10% of that trimethyl ammonium ion, so its positive charge density is 10%. I made an in-house control exactly like Magnaflock, except with 40%, so it has a 40% positive charge density and 60% acrylamide. And then the rest of these are the thiourea's. Again, after this, they're all 40% positive charge density. Here we have 20% of the two-point, 40% of the two-point thiourea, and then back to 20% with the three-point thiourea. And just to give an example of how this is, how these experiments are working, we're just doing this in test tubes, trying to keep it simple. We have a control here that just has phosphate and water by itself, and then the rest of these all have clay and phosphate mixed, waiting for the application of the polymer. And then this is what happens after 20 minutes. So we have our control again. This is just clay and phosphate in solution, no addition of any polymers. Here we have Magnaflock N, which isn't a really, it's not an appropriate polymer for the solid material I'm using, but I wanted it as a chemical control. And then we have Magnaflock C, and this is where you start to see that the water becomes really quite clear. So 5 mils of this top solution was taken and then analyzed by IC for the rest of these results. So to get into that, we started off with a 1 part per million phosphate solution, and this is percent removed compared to the standard that we had. And so clay was removing about 3 or 4%. Magnaflock N was removing essentially the same amount as the clay, so there's not really any significant interaction with just the acrylamide. And then we moved to Magnaflock C and A14. And this interaction is really important because it's already been shown that as you increase positive charge density on these polymers, you'll also increase their phosphate sequestration ability. And so this these results are important because it kind of shows the experiment is working. And so after that, we get into the thiourea-based polymers, and they, A14 becomes the new zero because they all have 40% positive charge density. So A65, which only has 20% of the thiourea on it, really just gave the same results as the 40% positive charge density A14. But then when we get up to 40% thiourea, we're actually seeing a doubling of the phosphate being able to be removed. And then when we get back to 20%, of the three-point thiourea, it didn't do quite as well, but it still got out about 9%. When we drop it down to 0.5 parts per million of the phosphate, again, we see that some of these, Magnaflock N is pulling out essentially what the clay is. We have the same relationship between Magnaflock C and A14, increasing just the positive charge density on the polymer. And then again, keeping the positive charge density the same, we're getting the same results from A65, and A76 seem to have dropped back down. But at 40% of the thiourea, we're able to, again, almost double the phosphate being removed from the aqueous phase. Oh, sorry. And then at 0.25, I'm sort of hitting the bottom of my experimental error. But again, we still see the increase going in positive charge density. But then here, they all sort of end up being the same as the control for them. But what's really interesting is the competition. We want to know, that was just with phosphate in solution. And so when you add other anions into solution, how are they going to behave? And so I took the 0.5 part per million phosphate point and then converted that to moles and then added equimolar concentrations of all these other anions. And so just looking at phosphate, this first column here is the phosphate only that I've already shown you, and this is with the anion mix. And so clay by itself was showing some increase. Magnaflox N was showing essentially what the clay is showing. And then again, we go back to Magnaflox C and A14, and we're seeing that same interaction where with increasing positive charge density, we're actually pulling out more of the phosphate. And they're able actually with they seem to increase, the average anyway, increased a little bit with the addition of anions. A65 again was giving the same results as A14, but then when we get up to A66, we show a slight decrease, which we were expecting based on Cudimito's paper, because he lost about 15% selectivity with that, but still doing better than its control and off the off-the-shelf polymer flocculants. A76 showed the same similar results as well with the decrease. So the only last question I just had was, I mean, if you just let these flocks sit on the bottom, is it going to finally re-release the phosphate back into solution, or will it pull out more? So I went ahead and looked at 20 minutes, which was the first point that we had, and then 2 hours, 12 hours, and 24 hours. So A14, which is the control, actually was able to almost triple how much it was taking out, given going from 20 minutes to 4 hours. So there's a serious time consideration. And then at 24 hours, it started to decrease. And so we're 24 hours seems to be where you said the turnover point. A65 didn't do as well. It was able to increase its the amount of phosphate sequestered, but it didn't do as well as the control here. And again, we see a drop off at 24 hours. And then A76, this has some errors in it, but essentially an increase at up to 12 hours and then the decrease at 24. So in conclusion, I think the results are generally positive. It seems like we're able to go ahead and add the thiourea and increase the phosphate binding capability of the polymers themselves. The quaternium ammonium ion group, the positive charge group, seemed to actually be more selective for phosphate than the thiourea group, which was really interesting. It did a really great job, and it also did a great job over time of pulling more phosphate out of the water without shaking at all. So with that, this was just a first try at this, and so it's sort of proof of concept studies. There's some alternate trapping groups. We'd like to try the thiourea without the aromatic group on it, and then use a cyclohexane ring instead of the benzene ring to get the three-point thiourea. And more recently, we were interested in a guanidinium ion. It's got a permanent positive charge based on its resonance structure, but also the geometry of these two amine groups should link up to be able to interact with phosphate as well. And polyacrylamides have gotten kind of a bad name recently, and so they seem to be sort of on their way out or being limited anyway. So other polymer flocculants we could use is ECH and polydadmac. They both have different variations of how they're forming the quaternary ammonium ion. But we should be able to replace these monomers with the polyacrylamide monomers and come up with a similar structure with the thiourea. And so I'd like to thank Dr. Kevin McInnes, my advisor. Dr. Todd Davis is a chemist out at Idaho State University that works with these thiureas, and his undergraduate, Adon Vitigu, actually helped make some of the starting material. And Dr. Robert Lascano with the USDA and all his guys helping out. And with that, I take questions.
Suppression in the phosphorus absorption or normalization with the anion, that graph right there.
Yeah.
With anions at equimolar concentrations.
Yeah, I was trying to. Okay, that's cool.
How would it be if the concentrations of those anions were 1,000 times higher than phosphorus?
Well, they actually are. The clay that I'm using actually has anions in it. I was just, so it's this or more. Like chlorine is actually at like 10 parts per million. It's way out there because the positively charged group. The quaternium ammonium ion isn't positively charged. It has a chlorine to equalize the charge. And so as it interacts with the clay, you displace chlorine. And so the chlorine's just off the chart. It also has sulfate, fluorine, and one of the other polymers has some contaminants in it too. And so trying to figure out of the other cations what's being pulled out instead of that gets a little more complicated. But yeah, it is a question and how much, where it's going to max out, if it can still compete at 10 parts per million in comparison, need to look at.
Or 1,000 parts per
million. Yeah.
I was going to ask, when would you use these instead of, say, alum?
Well, that was the only point, was just to try to avoid using metals at all. If we could just use the increase the binding capacity of the polymer to be able to pull the phosphate out, and then you don't have to use the alum. Just take that settled material, the sludge, and compost it and remove it that way. But
these would be pretty expensive. They're custom made.
Well, yeah, these are all made in house, and so, you know. What are the economics of scale, hopefully, though, if I could come down a little bit, but.
Oh, great question.
Yeah.
Do you think the disposal of the sediment will be an issue? You have sediment, right?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It'll have a higher phosphate content itself, but if you could take that sediment, if you don't add the metals to it, then you should be able to just compost it, and then you can move that compost further away from the point source. And so maybe spread it out a little bit more instead of the same agricultural fields that it gets applied to.